Shalom, and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. These podcasts are presented to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page, as well as we invite your comments and suggestions to me, Rabbi Address, at jewishsacredaging.com. And if you want, you can go to the homepage and leave a voicemail message for us. Well, there's a little voicemail icon on the right-hand side. It's really cool, and it works. So, welcome to today's podcast, Rabbi Marla Feldman, Executive Director of the Women of Reform Judaism. Hi, Marla.
Hi, Richie. Thank you. It's good to be here.
So tell me, first of all, it's great. Thank you for your time. And there's lots to talk about as your position as the executive of Women of Reform Judaism, which some people may have known as the National or North American Federation of Temple Sisterhoods. Talk to me a little bit about the background of this, because as every congregational rabbi knows, me included, that the sisterhood of a congregation is one of the great powerful entities within a congregation. Talk to me about this, a little bit of the history of what was NFTS and the emergence into what is now WRJ.
Sure, will do. Thanks, Richie. It's certainly nice to be appreciated. Just a few words about what WRJ is. And simply put, we're the women's affiliate of the Reform Jewish Movement. And as such, we provide opportunities for Reform women throughout North America and actually around the world to come together for what we call our three S's: sisterhood, spirituality, and social good. The social good really represents both our collective philanthropy. Many people will know that through the YES Fund, youth education special projects, and also our collective advocacy on social justice issues of concern, particularly to women. What we do is provide support to the work of about 400 sisterhoods or women's groups, and I'll talk about the change of name in a moment, that operate in Reform congregations. We're organized in 8 districts in North America and a growing cohort of individual members, which is new for us. Supporting their work means sharing best practices, helping them with member engagement, giving them program ideas, and most importantly, creating opportunities for them to network with each other. Leadership development has always been a primary focus of our organization, whatever our name was. We do that largely through conferences, which can take place in local communities as well as those districts, and at the North American and even the global level. And we also use technology like Zoom and webinars to do training and leadership development. And together, we provide the opportunity for Reformed Jewish women to raise their collective voices on issues that we care about, and that philanthropic work that I mentioned a moment ago. You noted the change of names, which is really quite interesting and something that is shifting even today. When we were founded as NFTS, the National Federation of Temple Sisterhoods. Of course, we did have to change to North American because we grew beyond America and include Canada. Today, we actually have sisterhoods in Israel. We have a first one in Australia recently. We have Spain, South America, South Africa. So we really are expanding our network globally. When we were founded, it was really very much a congregation-based network of women's groups, of sisterhoods. But over time, we recognized that we were more than that. And we really are also a network for all Reformed Jewish women, whether or not they're in a sisterhood and whether or not they're even in a Reformed congregation. So that name change took place in 1993 to recognize both our expanded mandate and also to recognize that we are more than a network of sisterhoods, but we're also a network of women individually and those in those sisterhoods. And of course, women was a term that also resonated for women of a certain era when the women's movement was growing and that terminology resonated for women. And to coin the phrase, it's not your grandmother's sisterhood. So women's groups became the more normative terminology. We changed our name to Women of Reform Judaism. Many of our sisterhoods, though not all, changed their name also from Sisterhood of Temple whatever to Women of Temple whatever. What's interesting now is the word sisterhood seems to be coming back in vogue. And I think that's a recognition that the relationship of women coming together, cultivating bonds and deep relationships with other like-minded women is an important part of who we are. And so that word sisterhood in many ways captures that in a way women of doesn't necessarily. So some of the sisterhoods that are thinking about changing their name to Women Of are going back and saying, wait a minute, we really are a sisterhood. We're a sisterhood of women who share values, and we want to keep that that image alive for us. So it is ever evolving, and sometimes things that were old are new again.
Yes, well, very symbolic of tradition and where the movement is and was and probably going to. Yeah, you know, I'm very interested because as a rabbi, I'm always very interested with colleagues. What drew them to the position? What was the motivation, Marla, to – because if I remember correctly, you're a second career rabbi, correct?
No, actually, the reverse. I was a first career rabbi. I, you know, went straight from college to rabbinical school. But then I took a few years out of congregational work to get a law degree.
Aha. Uh-huh. I knew the law somewhere in there.
So a little bit about my career journey, which has really been quite fun. I did start as a congregational rabbi, as I mentioned, and yet I really was kind of known as a social action rabbi. I loved the public policy work and the social justice work. And as I did more and more of that, I decided it would be helpful to get a law degree. So I took a few years out, got the law degree. And then for many years, I worked in the community relations field, the Jewish community relations field, which was also very fulfilling, and doing community relations, public policy, representing communities at large, first in Delaware and then in Detroit, Michigan. And then I had really the wonderful opportunity to join you on the staff of the URJ as the director of the Commission on Social Action, which, of course, is the public policy setting body for the entire reform movement. And in that capacity, I also facilitated the social action department of the URJ and did that for many years. With WRJ, then there was a brief period of time I was working in development with the URJ as well. So when the position with WRJ came open, it was really a wonderful opportunity for me to bring together all the different things that I had been doing. The public policy work, certainly, WRJ has a very strong advocacy agenda. But also the work that I did managing a department and doing fundraising, deep Jewish learning that is, of course, also a major part of what WRJ does, leadership development, and working with women has been a real blessing and a lot of fun. Working with women I have found, and in many cases, they're the same women I worked with in the social action work. And yet, as a network of women, the corporate culture is quite different. And I have to say, creative and fun. The women are smart and hands-on leaders. So it's been a lot of fun, a wonderful way for me to use all those different skills that I had cultivated over time and join a network of sisters to, you know, go back to what I was saying a few minutes ago. So with this latest incarnation of my career, I'm now part of a network of thousands of sisters who I know care about me and support me. And it's a really powerful place to be.
Marla, as we mentioned before, the women's movement, women's groups in congregations are so vital. You have the ability now to look from the 30,000 feet, so to speak, the cliche general view. What right now, especially given the impact of the overwhelming shift and changes in congregational life, what's the most important thing, or what are two or three of these powerful things that the women's groups in synagogues right now can offer?
Well, I mentioned advocacy several times, and as you might imagine, in this era right now, this political arena, women's voices are critically important. And so in the past couple of years, we've really ratcheted up our advocacy work, and I see that being needed going forward as well. I mentioned the social justice conference that we have coming up this weekend. And in fact, this is surprisingly the first time WRJ is holding a Washington public policy conference. But we're not doing it on our own. We're doing it very much in conjunction with the rest of the movement, with the consultation on conscience following immediately after our conference. So we're integrated and working collaboratively with others in the movement. That said, it's really important that we raise up the issues that are of particular concern to Jewish women. We have, from the time that we were NFTS, when we were first founded, advocacy has been important for WRJ, for WRJ women. The founding mothers were suffragists. They were fighting for the right to vote. And many of those early battles were battles that we are still fighting today, shockingly. Battles for birth control, battles for reproductive rights, battles for women's health. And those are issues that we are still fighting or refighting today. The Me Too movement that has been so prevalent in the news lately has really lifted up issues that we knew were in existence in our congregations, but really brought them to the fore. And the Reform movement, our congregations, our institutions are not immune. So talking about safety, respect, equity for women in the workplace is something that we need to be talking about. So WRJ is partnering with the Women's Rabbinic Network and the CCAR and others in the movement in a couple of ways. We are partnering in programming at the upcoming URJ Biennial. We're partnering in having created the Reform Pay Equity Initiative. So everyone in the movement agrees that pay equity is an important issue, and yet it did not reach the highest level of advocacy and attention until WRJ and WRN got together, brought everyone around the table of the Reform Pay Equity Initiative and said, it's time. It is no longer acceptable that the statistics that we know, that women still are earning 80% of men as Jewish professionals in our congregations, just can't stand any longer. So how do we tackle this in an integrated way and a holistic way so that we can really move the bar? So working on pay equity issues, working on safety and respect issues for women in the workplace, those are things that we'll be doing, we have done, and will continue to do that within our own community, within our congregations. And then in the larger community as well, those issues of women's rights in the workplace would get lost, I think, if it weren't for women as advocates pushing the envelope on those issues and saying these need to be important issues today as well. It's not enough that we have policy on reproductive rights, on women's health, on pay equity, and all those things which the Reform movement does and everyone agrees with, and we are an egalitarian movement. And yet that's not enough. We need to be continuing to work on these issues. Just in the past couple of weeks, we've seen legislation in Alabama setting abortion rights back to the 1950s, criminalizing abortion. We've seen Georgia and other states passing fetal heartbeat bills. So we have to fight these same battles over again. And I think this is an important role for WRJ. So everyone in the movement agrees, and yet who's going to train that next generation of women to be advocates on these issues? You know, the younger women grew up in an age when these things were legal, when we weren't fighting the battles. And women of my generation, you know, baby boomers and older, remember the battles of the past. We need to teach advocacy skills and strategy and the power of a women's collective voice on these issues to the next generation of women.
So I have to ask you, because this is being played out in congregation land, all of, regardless in many cases of the denomination, but especially in the more liberal communities, the WRJ groups and congregations obviously going to reflect the culture of the congregations. And 2019 is significantly different than 1979 or 1969, when many of us were marching for a lot of these so-called liberal issues. But the world has changed. How are you, and this may have been discussed at your meetings, but how are you navigating this tension between the more conservative element that does exist now in the movement and the more traditional, let's say, liberal element in the movement? Because WRJ, NFTS, their history of resolutions on a lot of these issues are very, very, you know, are progressive, to say the least. But how are you managing this tension? Because I'm sure you've run into issues where some women from various congregations or maybe even parts of the country who say, we've gone too far, we're not going to, I'm not prepared to to go this far now. Are you seeing this at all amongst the WRJ?
Yes, I think everyone in the movement has seen that. I suspect, given my social action background, that in WRJ land, we probably see it a little less, perhaps, than in other arms of the movement. But certainly, we've got congregations and sisterhoods that are in red states, blue states, and everything in between. And, you know, they have to make choices. We all have to make choices. But I would suggest to you that maybe the way we remember the 30s, the 60s, you know, and we look back on our policy, our very progressive policy, and we think it was easy. But with a shout out to Al Vorspan, who recently passed away, he could tell you stories about the battles that they fought around those positions, too. So I don't know that it was ever easy.
Oh, no,
I think
it's
always
easy. It's never easy.
But this is where we've ended up. And this is where we've ended up based on our understanding of Jewish text and tradition and what we learned from our own history. So the first resolution, for example, in 1915, our very first biennial convention, WRJ's first resolution was about immigration rights. And I suspect it wasn't easy then to take the position that they did. They were petitioning the president at the time. At the same time, they were fighting for women's right to vote. And some women were saying, wait, we need to pick our battles. They were saying, yeah, and they all need to be our battles. They were fighting both for the right to vote, and they were fighting for immigration rights for those who were vulnerable in the world. So we've always had to balance those competing causes and concerns. We have to be strategic. And in fact, there may be some places where women will make different choices about what they're going to work on. I think finding consensus is not always easy. And sometimes we need to create consensus where it doesn't exist. And that means working in education, teaching Jewish values, and seeing where people end up, and looking at our own policy and our history. I'm really proud to say WRJ, we discovered relatively recently, was the very first religious organization in America to take a position on gay rights. That was 1965. The rest of the movement didn't come on board for another 20 years. So, and we discovered it, as I said, because an academic was doing research and couldn't find any other religious organizations who had taken those policy positions that we did. So we're proud of that on one level, but on the other level, we have to remember that wasn't easy. It was controversial in its day. So today we work on these issues, and yes, there will be people who disagree. And sometimes we will say, okay, so there are plenty of issues to work on, and maybe we'll make a different choice as to what we're focusing on right now in a particular community. And others will say, you know, that's okay. We can have differences of opinion within our congregations. And yet, as a movement, Reform Judaism and WRJ stand for certain things. And that doesn't mean that everyone in every pew agrees with every resolution that we make. But we adopt these policies in a democratic process. We vote on them. We study them. We do the research. And we reflect on our own values and our own history. And sometimes we work on those issues with our collective voice, even knowing that some of our individuals, our individual members, don't always agree. And I'll just share one message. When I was doing social action work, actually, it was before I was with the Commission on Social Action. I was in my congregation, and I was speaking on, I think, economic justice. I'm not even sure what the social justice issue was, but it was certainly a progressive position. And I had people argue with me afterwards and say, well, that's political, and we shouldn't be political from the pews. And I reminded this person that political is not the same as partisan. He is correct that we shouldn't be partisan. We're not an arm of any political party. And yet political means bringing our values into the world with us. And I think we're obligated to do that. And as I said to this gentleman, if you're not comfortable with it, I understand. And I respect that. But you have to take it up with Isaiah, because I didn't write the Bible. I didn't write these commandments about how we're supposed to treat our neighbor. And what kind of community we should build, a society that's holy the way God commands us to be holy, as in the holiness code that we just read last week in the Torah. So I speak to the values that I learned from Isaiah and our tradition and our history, And if it makes some people mad, we can talk about that. But at the end of the day, as a collective entity, I think we need to speak to what we stand for.
Marla, there's such a, as you observe, as you travel and work with WRJ, there is a tremendous demographic and generational transition that is taking place within the movement as well as American Judaism. So, and you alluded to this a little bit earlier. So what are the strategies now? And can you just talk about these strategies to have WRJ attract millennial women, Gen Xers, many of whom are not affiliated or are marginally affiliated with an established congregation. So what's the outreach to, or inreach, if the case may be, to these other generations? Are you employing different strategies than you would to our generation? What's your experience now?
Well, it's a great question. Everyone in the Jewish community is asking these questions, and there's no magic bullet. If I had the magic bullet, I'd be paid a lot more money, and I'd have a different job perhaps. But I think that there are some basic principles that we can all follow, and we're trying to help our individual women's groups wrap their head around this as well. Perhaps the biggest thing is we need to ask. We need to ask women of different generations, what do they care about? What's important to them? To that end, we are training women in our sisterhoods to do listening campaigns. It's a skill that can be learned. So rather than trying to convince women that they should come join and do exactly what we've been doing in the past, trying to get them to care about the things we care about, we should be asking, what do you care about? And then discovering if, in fact, there's a synergy between what they care about and what we have the capacity to work on. I think we need to be nimble, we need to be flexible, and we need to be responsive to the interests of different women of different ages. That said, we can't be all things to all people. We need to be authentically ourselves. As I have said several times, we do stand for certain things. We're not going to be something different just to get more members or to get younger members. But I think that we can be a platform for women of any age to bring their concerns, the issues that they care about, to our table. So I'm not worried about Jewish women. Jewish women have always organized and found ways to network with each other and to work on the issues they care about. That will always continue. I think the question at hand is whether younger women are going to do that through WRJ or through Reform congregations. They're going to do it. The question is, can we be open and nimble and responsive to their interests and create that platform for them to bring their concerns and interests and do it through our networks, or will they create their own networks? I hope, obviously, the former, that they'll do it through our network. And to that end, we had a recent strategic plan that's given us some suggestions and some helpful tools and techniques that we can use, and doing listening campaigns is part of that.
Do you see the opportunity or the possibility, given just a follow up on a little bit of a thread that you just wove, that in the future, as the world changes, that WRJ groups, women of Reform Judaism or younger women, will band together in groups that are interested in advocacy and et cetera, but not be affiliated with a congregation? I mean, you may have already gotten a call from a group of women sitting somewhere. We're not affiliated with any congregation, but we like the positions that WRJ has, and we would like to become a member. Do you see that happening, or have you already gotten that call?
Yes, we already have gotten that call. I can't say it's a large number of calls, but in fact, there are groups of women who have reached out to us and who have said they want to be connected to our larger network. It's not just around advocacy. They want to be part of a network of women. It goes back to that relational sisterhood. They want to be part of a something larger than themselves. In some cases, they're social groups. We have women who are in a book club. One of our programs is called Lilith Salons. It's kind of like a book club, but using Lilith Magazine, which is a quarterly magazine, and providing discussion questions for groups that meet quarterly and discuss the articles. That's a WRJ program, and yet we've got groups of women who use that program who are not in a sisterhood, not in a congregation. They do it like a book club, and they have asked to join WRJ, part of our network.
So are they members? Are these non-congregational groups officially members of WRJ?
They can be. This was something that we changed very recently. I mentioned individual members. That's new for us. It's
right.
really been only the past few years. We actually had to change our constitution to allow us to embrace individuals as members who are not connected through a sisterhood, and to allow individual groups to join us who are not part of a Reform congregation. So that's very new. I can't say we have a lot, but we have had some interest. And that's part of being open and welcoming, being outside of our boxes, so that we can truly be the voice of Reform or progressive Jewish women wherever they are, and connect with them and let them be part of our network.
So we're speaking with Rabbi Marla Feldman, the Executive Director of Women of Reform Judaism, the women's movement of the Reform movement, the progressive movement in North America. Marla, at the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned the three S's, sisterhood and relations, social activism and advocacy. But before we start running out of time, I want to explore a little bit about that third S in spirituality. What, since it's such a buzzword right now in the 21st mm-hmm. century, talk to me a little bit about WRJ's involvement with the spiritual.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that really make us unique as a Jewish women's organization. There are lots of other Jewish women's organizations, but they're not religious organizations. They're Jewish, but they may be trans-denominational or multi-denominational or political, and they're not organized through congregations. That is one of the things that makes WRJ unique. The Conservative Women's League is similarly unique. And it's part of our history. So we talked about advocacy, but advocacy in the Reform movement in the 19-teens and 1920s meant creating space in the religious life of the community for women. It meant finding roles for women on the Bima. When they were founded, women in most places were not allowed on the Bima. They certainly weren't allowed to read Torah, and they weren't allowed to give sermons. So the women, the early WRJ women, created those spaces on the Bima. And in many ways, that set the foundation and laid the groundwork for women rabbis, created an image for people of women on the Bima without the skies falling in. And that was an important role for them. With the Women's Torah Commentary, WRJ really set itself out as a place for women's spirituality, women's learning, women's scholarship in the religious arena. And that work continues. We support women musicians who are bringing Jewish music, creative Jewish music, to the fore in Reform networks. Worship is an important part of all of our conferences and meetings, and that is not something that takes place in other Jewish women's groups. But if you come to a WRJ event, you will see the power of women's spirituality in those moments of prayer when there are hundreds of women standing together, praying, singing together. It is a powerful feeling that women have. And it's that spiritual voice, you know, going back to a time when women didn't have that voice to today when women have the voice but still need to use it and articulate it. It's a powerful thing, and it is very much a part of what we do.
If before we start really running out of time, and it's just sort of like when the rabbi says, in conclusion, you know you have a long time to go yet, but if somebody wants to get in touch with you, WRJ, what's the contact information for you and WRJ?
Well, the easiest is our website, which is wrj.org. Info@wrj.org is an email address that anyone can use to connect with us. If you've got questions about our advocacy positions, about our programs, about membership, about joining as an individual or with a group of women, about how to find a local sisterhood near you, about those districts and their conferences, any of those things you can find out from info@wrj.org or going to our website, wrj.org.
So in my travels and work with Jewish Sacred Aging, one of the things that always comes, it's a constant, is because most of the people who are doing it remain women, are issues around healthcare and caregiving. And caregiving remains the number one concern and emerging as a social justice issue as we tell every congregation that I visit, is this whole approach on the social justice approaches to healthcare payment, equity in payment, access and delivery, access to the system. But most of all, it revolves around the whole arena of caregiving. And because most of the people who are caregivers are women, I would imagine that this is a conversation that WRJ has had. And I'd love to know, because you met, we're recording this before your meeting, and we're posting this after your meeting. So I want to know if WRJ has begun to look at this whole construct, because it's an intergenerational construct. It's not just baby boomers, but it's a whole intergenerational thing. Has WRJ begun to look at the whole challenges around caregiving, the caregiving impact upon a family?
The short answer is yes. I can't tell you that it's a significant program right now. Of course, from an advocacy perspective, WRJ has lots of policy on insurance reform, on universal health care, on the Affordable Care Act and inclusion of elements that will support women and women's health. So that's true on an advocacy level, and it's certainly, you know, part of our advocacy agenda. On a personal level, though, and this goes to the sisterhood level, that relational level, when women get together, they're talking about these things and they're sharing resources and networks. At every one of our conferences, we provide sessions that help our women understand the tools and the resources that are available, including you. We've been very blessed to have you, Richie, at many of our conferences speaking to our women. The whole idea of sacred aging and wise aging are things that our women care about. Many of our members are baby boomers, and so they're talking about that second stage of life and how to find meaning after the kids are out of the house and when they're retired from their jobs, and yet they're still vibrant and active, and how do they find meaning in that stage of life. So those are all things that we talk about quite a bit in our conferences. And the other thing I would add, you mentioned women's health. It's been one of the things I've become aware of in working in this job that I was really not aware of before. Of course, women's health we all know about, and we have family members who are dealing with health issues. But until I worked for a women's organization, I really did not realize to what degree cancer, breast cancer, ovarian cancer is really epidemic
in our world.
You know, we have good and welfare moments at our conferences, and women share where they are, at what stage of chemo, at what, how many years post-chemo, how their daughters are doing, how their mothers are doing. And it is something that has affected every single woman in that room of hundreds of women. And that's a healthcare crisis that will not get attention unless women's groups like ours bring it to the fore.
No, I will tell you from personal experience, and kind of the congregation I serve in transition now from the union to running Jewish Sacred Aging, when we had our listening campaign and focus groups around care and community, and we were talking about what was the number one issue, without a doubt, it was cancer and cancer support. And to this congregation's credit, they evolved. We structured it around the whole Jewish approach to health and wellness. And that's a whole other conversation of how you market something. But and as I travel around North America in congregations and in conferences, just this last month to the chaplains, National Chaplains Conference, Jewish chaplains, this issue, especially in women's health, I mean, the men are still in somewhat denial, but the women's health issues, despite all the publicity on TV and et cetera, but various types of cancers, dementia, Alzheimer's, because it is a family systems issue, and the juggling of things. So I'm glad that this is on the agenda, because it will affect more and more and more families, not just the individuals. Marla, moving forward, and the last thing I want to ask you is, you've come out of some meetings in the end of May and planning meetings for the URJ biennial in December. But looking forward, let's say to the 2019-2020 program year, What would you say are the three major issues that you think WRJ has to look at in the coming year?
Well, I think it's easier for me to tell you the three things we'll be focusing on the most. You know, what issues will come to the fore are sometimes hard to know. Sometimes you have to, you know, work in reaction to things that are going on in the community. I mentioned advocacy several times. That is not going to go away. What exactly is going to happen in advocacy? Hard to know. You know, everyone is bracing for the possibility of Roe v. Wade being addressed by the Supreme Court. What's the court going to do? And that's why there's so much activity right now at the state level, because some states are trying to make sure it will be illegal in their state when and if Roe v. Wade goes down the tubes. And others are, like New York, for example, are making sure their constitutions protect women's reproductive rights. So there's a lot of state activity going on right now. We'll be working on that. I'm really pleased to give you a little heads up of what will be announced over the course of the weekend. We are working collaboratively with the Religious Action Center and its Brit Olam program to support a cohort of congregations and sisterhoods working on reproductive justice issues. And that's in part in response to all of this state activity that's been going on. So we can provide support, not just to sisterhoods, but anyone in the reform movement who wants to work on that issue. We'll provide some support for them. The Me Too, safety, respect, equity, dealing with sexual harassment and equal pay and equal opportunity in our congregations and beyond will continue to be high priorities for us in the coming years. Interestingly, we really haven't talked about Israel much. Israel, of course, continues to have a special place in our hearts, and it's a challenge for progressive Jews. On the one hand, we love Israel, we support Israel, but we also are supporting those progressives in Israel who share our values and helping them to create an Israeli society that supports those values. So balancing that is something that we continue to work with. We partner with the Israel Religious Action Center in promoting gender rights issues in Israel. We partner with Women of the Wall to advocate for women's religious rights in Israel, and of course with the Israel Movement for Progressive Judaism to support the growth and thriving of Reform congregations in Israel. So that will continue to be something that we work on. And then as we always have, women's leadership and women's leadership development are things that we will always be working on through our conferences, providing those opportunities for women to learn and grow together, to cultivate and deepen their skills with other women as women, and to bring those skills with them into their congregations, into their sisterhoods, and into the community at large. So those are all things that we will continue to be working on in the next several years.
Well, obviously, you've had a busy month from the going into the RAC, which was last month in May, and some of the programs that you're evolving in cooperation. And so once again, the three, I guess, cornerstones of WRJ, as you've elucidated, the concept of sisterhood and relationships, spirituality and social activism and social advocacy. Again, Marla, real fast before we conclude, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what are the websites? What's the contact information?
WRJ's website is wrj.org, www.wrj.org, and our email is info@wrj.org.
Marla Feldman, Rabbi Marla Feldman, the Executive Director of Women of Reform Judaism. Thank you, Marla. Thank you very much. Lots of great information. Continued good luck on all the great work that you and your colleagues at WRJ are doing. I know several of those people very well. Some of them came up through our regional Pennsylvania Council network, so I know how powerful they are, great people. So continued kol hakavod, continued good luck and success. Stay healthy, stay well, and thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Richie. Same to you.
And to all of you, thank you for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. And again, we welcome your comments and suggestions to me, rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com, and also invite you to visit our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. We appreciate your continued support of our work, and if you would like to make a tax-exempt donation to help further the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts, we invite you to go to our website, jewishsacredaging.com, and click on the donate icon, which you'll find at the top of the page, and we greatly appreciate your support. Seekers of Meaning is recorded at the studios of the award-winning Lubetkin Global Media here in beautiful Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and produced by Steve Lubetkin. Thank you again for listening. I am your host, Rabbi Richard Address, and I look forward to greeting you on our next Seekers of Meaning. Shalom.